The following Dharma talk was given by Jodi Hojen Kimmel at Zen Mountain Monastery. Hojen Sensei is head priest at the monastery and the abbot of the Zen Center in New York City. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
Taking up a green vegetable. Turn it into a 16-foot golden body. Take a 16-foot golden body and turn it into a green vegetable leaf. Handle a single leaf of a green in such a way that it manifests the body of the Buddha. This in turn allows the Buddha to manifest through the leaf. This is a power which you cannot grasp with your rational mind. It operates freely according to the situation, in a most natural way. At the same time, this power functions in our lives to clarify and settle activities and is beneficial to all living beings. That's Master Dogen in Tenzo Kyokun, Instructions for the Cook, where he's once again inviting us into his zazen. So this Tenzo Kyokin describes how the Tenzo, the head of the kitchen, practices and needs to go about their work in a monastery. And of course, it's a lot more than that. It's about us cooking our supreme meal. He describes the attitudes in which to go about conducting and practicing our lives. And he offers a way to relate and care for people, for objects, and everything that comes up in our lives, everything that comes up here in Sesshin. How do we apply our aspiration so that it will function for the way, Dogen asks. What is the basic ingredients with which we prepare this life? Because the attitude with which we practice anything determines the quality of our experience, of our practice as an individual, as a sangha, as a community, as a nation, and ever-widening circles. So not only are we invited into the mind of practice, how we bring zazen into every activity, what Dogen's speaking of, the kitchen is a perfect place to encounter life and death situations, giving, taking away. Dogen speaks of food as dharma, and as dharma as food. So I came to Zen Mountain Monastery in 1990 for the first time. After that, I started to drive up. It was 3 hours exactly, door to door, from just outside of Philadelphia to the front door. And I always I'd leave at 4:30 in the morning, stellar time to drive because nobody's out there. And there was a great Philadelphia New Age radio station called WXPN, and it was all this sort of celestial, binaural kind of sounds, and I would just like glide to the monastery. I'd be here by 7:30, and caretaking was at 7:45. And most of the time, I was put in the kitchen. And most of the time, I was making salad dressing on those Sundays that I came. This woman named Angie was the cook. And then I applied for residency, a year of residency, and started that the next year. And a week later, I was informed that I had the position of the cook. I was delighted, not surprised. And a fellow from New Zealand, Keith Meter, was the cook at the time. He was leaving. So he was training me. And Shugen, who was the senior monastic, was the Tenzo. And at that time, what we know as the common room downstairs with the couches was our inner office. So that's where Shugen lived. And he could pop in the kitchen at any time as I was working to train me. And then when I met Daito Roshi and Doka-san, he said he'd like me to read this fascicle by Dogen, Tenzo Kyokin, Instructions for the Cook. And Uchiyama Roshi had written a book, Refining Your Life, right? Zen Kitchen to Enlightenment. By Dogen and Uchiyama. And then Daito, I remember he said with his big toothy grin, and then we'll look at how do you take a lettuce leaf and handle it in such a way that it manifests the body of a Buddha. And of course, I just smiled back nervously. Right. And I believe Daito assigned this book to every cook after that. And one former cook said to me, it's not reading the Tenzo Kyokan that's difficult, it's doing it. And then on the back of the book, it says, Dogen, one of the most original religious reformers, discloses the secrets of enlightenment. You ready? Living with a joyful heart, caring with the deep concerns of a parent, and performing all activities with compassion. So I will take up these three secrets, these three attitudes, now that the secret's out, of enlightenment. So at the time Dogen wrote this, he had left Kenenji in Kyoto, and he set up his own monastery in Koshoji in Fukakusa, which was south of the city. And he'd already developed a reputation as a very rigorous teacher, so the number of his followers and disciples was increasing because of that. And when more people come, you need more guidelines. They call them regulations. We call them guidelines. To ensure that everyone who is practicing had as few difficulties as possible. So the guidelines are born out of situations as it develops. And he finished writing Tenzo Kyokun in 1237 at the age of 37. So in a traditional Zen monastery, the Tenzo or head cook position was usually held by a monastic considered to have a way-seeking mind, or a senior disciple with an aspiration for enlightenment. So here we have our trusty way-seeking mind disciples, Kian, our Tenzo, and Brigitte and Robbie as our cooks. And the temples were organized similar to what we follow. Every monastic had a position here, sometimes several hats, different responsibilities, and each position depends on other positions, right? So everyone needs to fulfill their responsibilities so that the monastic life functions smoothly, and we support each other's practice as monastics, as residents now, as lay people, as the Sangha, to embody, and so the Sangha can embody, can feel that interdependence and join in, because we're all part of that. So having a role in a temple position places us in the position
of practicing for ourselves and for the benefit of others at once. So everyone that enters has a role, just like each of us in Sesshin. We're all interdependent with each other sitting here. Everyone's got a role. Everyone has a role. And this is key in our practice. On one hand, no one can do the practice for us. And on the other, we know that our practice is dependent on people. So, as mentioned, the secrets of enlightenment is that the Tenzo and everyone in training should practice in their positions with three attitudes of mind: joyful mind, Kishin; parental or nurturing mind, Roshin; and magnanimous mind, Daishin. Living with a joyful heart, caring with the deep concerns of a parent, and performing all activities with compassion. And of course, we're always speaking about now, not some other time. What are we at this very moment? Joyful, pure, caring, vast, eternal beings. Though we may not, you might say, not this one. We may not see it. We may not feel it, think it. We may waver, have our opinions. But he says, develop these attitudes. He said, bring it on. Bust it out. It's already who you are. Dogen puts it like this: the aspects of these attitudes are to see that working for the benefit of others benefits oneself, to understand that through making every effort for the prosperity of the community, one revitalizes one's own character. And he speaks early on about how important it is that the Tenzo understands and cuts the notions. He says that this work is the same as that performed by an ordinary cook or kitchen helper. He says the monastics holding each office are the disciples of the Buddha and all carry out the activities of a Buddha. The emphasis being on how Zazen functions in our everyday activities and grounds us to the earth, down to the earth of the way. That everyone engaging the Buddha way is a disciple of the Buddha, practicing Zazen, as he says, single-mindedly with all one's energies. So first he speaks of a joyful spirit, one of gratefulness and buoyancy. He says, consider this carefully. It's always like, why does he say that? Consider it carefully. A joyful spirit, one of gratefulness and buoyancy. And when we consider all the myriad circumstances which brought us to the Dharma, just think about your path and all the circumstances that we get to have this opportunity to engage Dharma practice, the path. It's a rare gift. And sometimes I know I would say like, yeah, yeah, yeah. But look around. I mean, I live in Brooklyn most of the time. You would think like the whole Brooklyn should be coming to the Zendo, you know. But it's only a few. It's, I mean, it's enough. But where is everybody? So it's not that common. Our practice today is due to every moment we have lived, every choice we have made up to this moment. If one decision had changed, we can't say what our path would be, or it would be the same. We can also consider there are many ways we could be born. So to rejoice that we've had this birth in this world, that we are capable of using our body and mind to practice the Dharma, that might puff a little joy into you, if you let it. And that might naturally arise. So we hear the phrase often, and Daido used to roar it, put your entire being into your activity. And Daido would say, do what you're doing while you're doing it, completely. And then he'd say, this is no small thing. Consider that carefully. Do what you're doing while you're doing it. This is no small thing. And this phrase comes from Bendoa, which means wholehearted practice. Shige spoke about already whole, wholehearted. Put your entire being into your activity. It's a real thing. It's a real practice. And it's a little bit more than just being present. Because how can we not be present? I mean, we're here. We can go off in our mind, but we're here. We're always present. We just have to get back here. This is the complete practice of being undivided, he's speaking of, this merging with our activity, this doing what we're doing while we're doing it, dissolving the separation. What makes that separation? How does that happen? Dissolving the split between subject and object. When we bring the fresh conduit of eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind directly. And most of us, I think, have had the experience of a joyful, open mind, being wholehearted in an activity. Maybe the ones we want to do. What about the other ones? Because we know that this can happen. We can have a very annoyed, angry, not wanting what is moment as we're doing what we're doing while we're doing it. That comes up. And the world suddenly gets very narrow, very necessary, completely filled as that, with all our thoughts about things rushing in. And we forget we're aware. We forget we know what's true. It just takes us. But if we have this, if we care about this attitude we're in, then we may see that with our awareness and acceptance, we can see through these states. It will be fleeting. And we can relax more and more just to have a direct meeting with our senses as we're engaged. We can just see that as it is. You might find a bit of joy right there when that happens, when you can do that. Dogen says, if you encourage yourself with complete sincerity, you will want to exceed monastics of old in wholeheartedness and ancient practitioners in thoroughness. If you practice thoroughly, there will be a way to surpass them. If this is not yet clear to you, it is because your thoughts run around like a wild horse and your feelings jump about like a monkey in the forest. Whew, whew, vine to vine. When the monkey and the horse step back and reflect upon themselves, freedom from all discrimination is realized naturally. This is the way to turn things while being turned by things. Prepare the meals, our life, day and night in this way without wasting time. If there is sincerity in your cooking and associated activities, whatever you do will be an act of nourishing the sacred body. This is also the way of ease and joy for the great assembly. Uchiyama says it's called life that is lived fully and completely with nothing held back, the supreme meal. And I was remembering watching a film, How to Cook Your Life. Did you ever see that one? It's a documentary featuring Ed Brown, who is a Zen teacher and a cook. He was kind of the founder of the Greens restaurant, the Tassajara. And it was made by one of my favorite filmmakers, Doris Dari. And it opens with him telling his students that he is a human being. And like all human beings, he can get irritable, fed up, and frustrated. And then at one point, he becomes really annoyed with his students because they're not putting the right amount of salt in the bread that they're making in the bread recipe. And this film is not sweetened. It's showing Ed at his finest. He did a retreat here, so I witnessed what might be taken as excessive fed-upness. And actually, he was clearly demonstrating a very important point. And that's how our lives are discovered, in the details, in these very details. Fed up, frustrated. Details are what Dogen points to all through this instructions to the cook. He says we only have the moment-to-moment details to sincerely care for. So you can look at that yourself. How true is that for you? The moment-to-moment details, that's all we have to care for. And there's another story about a very old Tenzo Dogen met on the boat to China. And before I came here, there was another person on that boat, Shiromen, who was a potter. And I remember reading because at that time, Japan didn't have a lot of glazes. A lot of the work was raw. So this potter was going to China to get the secret glazes from China to bring back to Japan. Dogen was going to China to get the secret teachings. So all these secrets were happening on the boat. But when I came here, I had read the story of this potter, and Dogen's name was mentioned. So when I heard Daido's talk and he said, Dogen, I was like, that's the guy on the boat. He's back. It was kind of cool. It's kind of a confirmation, you know. We're on the right boat. So after a convo Dogen had with this old Tenzo, he was very impressed with his dharma. And the Tenzo said, come visit me at my monastery. And when he went, the old man was drying mushrooms in the courtyard. And it was one of those dog day afternoons where the stones, you know, when stones can burn your feet, you can't even walk on them. It was kind of like that, as it's described. And this man was nearly 70 years old, had a cane and arched back, and Dogen asked him, why don't you have an attendant dry those mushrooms for you? And the Tenzo answered, others are not me. Dogen asked, the sun is hot, why do it now? The Tenzo answered, what time should I wait for? I have taken this position in my old age. This is the fulfillment of many years of practice. How can I delegate my responsibilities to others? Dogen writes, I again asked the Tenzo, honorable Tenzo, why don't you concentrate on Zazen practice and on the study of the ancient masters' words rather than troubling yourself by holding this position of Tenzo and just working? Is there anything good about it? The Tenzo laughed and replied, good man from a foreign country. You do not understand practice or know the meaning of the words of ancient masters. Hearing him respond this way, I suddenly felt ashamed and surprised. So I asked him, what are words? What is practice? And the Tenzo said, if you penetrate this question, how can you fail to become a person of understanding? Dogen withdrew with a deep appreciation of the Tenzo's practice and the manifestation of the Buddha Dharma, the sincerity and wholeheartedness of his practice. So, what time should I wait for? What time should we wait for? Important part of our practice is knowing what it's time for. That it's our practice and no one else's. I like to think that the old Tenzo drying the mushrooms was doing it with a joyful mind, with gratitude and joy, which comes from serving and benefiting others as himself. He knew what it was time for, and it was his to do. What is it time for? Why does the Zendo thwack, closed, sit upstairs? Supper's at 5:30. There's a service. I need to apologize now. When I came here, Daido lived in what's now the Jizo house. It was called the Parsonage. And he had a big picture window facing the monastery. So he could see right into the Zendo, right up to the altar. And one morning, the bat phone, we had something called the bat phone, which meant he was calling, it had a certain ring, we all knew, and we were supposed to go down and answer it. So the bat phone rings, and it's Daido. I was the monitor. He said, the Jikido's late. And I looked at my watch, and I was like, oh my God, the candle wasn't lit. He saw it from his living room and called over and said, know what it's time for. Know what it's time for. So do we have that wait to start practicing? Because it begins when we begin. But what are we practicing? In the kitchen, knives are sharp. Potatoes and mushrooms are slippery when wet. Things can burn. Vegetables rot. Details, caring, timing. And all of this contains the aspect of the essence of joy. When we do that, when we're caring, when we're knowing what it's time for, there's a joy that naturally emerges. And many of us in Sesshin will have an opportunity, of course, to work in the kitchen, where we're giving a simple, repetitive physical tasks like washing, chopping, preparing vegetables, deceivingly simple and such an incredible opportunity, right, to practice wholeheartedly, to do what's announced, right? Do what you're doing, bring yourself back. I remember when Chike was chief disciple, she said, I got a bowl of onions during caretaking, a giant bowl of onions to cut up. So how do we let in what is given and let it be our entire life until it's finished? Nothing else to worry about. The entire universe, just chopping onions. The entire universe, just chopping onions. And to discover what happens when we enter an activity in that way. See what happens when our life is engaged with all the senses, doing this one thing, chopping onions. You hear that, the knife, the crunching, the onion juice on the blade pressing against your knuckles. Your nose gets that, I don't know what the word is, ping, you know, that goes up and burns, and then your eyes, you start weeping. Wholeheartedly engaged like this, want for nothing, lacking nothing. See if joyful mind doesn't arise. The second attitude, he says, is nurturing or parental mind. The mind of treating all things as being sacred, having respect, affectionate, caring concern for whatever we're handling. Whatever we're handling. How deep is a love like that? Taking up a green vegetable, turn it into a 16-foot golden body. Take a 16-foot golden body and turn it into a green vegetable leaf. Handle even a single leaf of a green in such a way that it manifests the body of the Buddha. This in turn allows the Buddha to manifest through the leaf. This is a power you cannot grasp with your rational mind. It operates freely, according to the situation, in a most natural way. At the same time, this power functions in our lives to clarify and settle activities and is beneficial to all living beings. So with a nurturing mind, we make all things, all activities alive and vibrant. So to really strive to treat objects, affairs, and particularly people, each other, with good care and respect. I always love this part. This is probably my favorite part of this fascicle. Take special care lest a mouse accidentally fall into the pot. Under no circumstances allow anyone who happens to be drifting through the kitchen to poke their fingers around or look into the pot. Take heed. I was like, I think Dogen's talking to me. So he's not really talking about some magical cosmic power. It's natural to care. One of the Jukai folks the other week mentioned a 12-step saying, which puts, I think, this sentiment into, in a pithy, unadorned way. It says, you can't think your way to a better life, but you can act your way to better thinking. You can't think your way to a better life, but you can act your way to better thinking. When we act in a way where we are seeing with loving eyes, handling things as sacred, you can almost feel immediately the nutrition that comes from that, and in turn will nurture others. Oh, yeah, so then we're fully participating in that miraculous expression. I was remembering a woman from a Zen training weekend. She wasn't here, her husband was. And she sent a video clip of him vacuuming at home. And she said, I don't know what happened there, but this is good. It was just a 3-minute clip. So where do we draw the line of an activity being less sacred? This washing and putting the dishes away in a nice stack, carefully back in its place, undivided effort. Parking your car straight. How nurturing. You'll feel it. like then taking up two spots or not getting near the car next to you, putting your shoes next to each other on the shoe rack. It sounds pretty simple, but when you do it, just register the, because it takes something to do it till it becomes natural. You just think that way after a while as you practice it with that care, with that kind of attention. Everything with equal care, which includes being prudent and aware what is needed. Another passage says, see the pot as your own head, the water as your lifeblood. And then third, he speaks of this magnanimous mind or big mind. He says, like a mountain, stable and impartial. Exemplifying the ocean, it is tolerant and views everything from the broadest perspective. Although drawn by the voices of spring, do not allow your heart to fall. With this attitude, we engage in activities fair-minded, impartial, not swayed by our judgments of good or bad. And Dogen offers the Tenzo this advice for practicing with a big mind in the kitchen. Your attitude towards things should not be contingent upon their quality. A person who is influenced by the quality of a thing or who changes his speech, their speech, and manner according to appearance or position of the people they meet is not a person working in the way. What is impartiality and non-discriminating mind? So nurturing mind makes things sacred and worthy of respect. All things equally sacred and valuable. This mind is stable and imperturbable. He says, while the wind may whip up the waves of the ocean surface, a big mind lets us remain a full, vast body down to the depths. Just because big mind makes everything equally sacred and valuable, it doesn't mean we ignore the differences between things, differences between people. And the mind is broad and impartial enough to include and encompass differences rather than pretending they aren't there. We have to discriminate stones from lentils. There are differences drawn. Are we taking the stones from the lentils or the lentils from the stones? Dogen expresses this when he describes cleaning up in the kitchen, on the cushion, and on the cushion. Put those things that naturally go in a high place on a high place, and those that would be most stable on a low place. Clean the chopsticks, ladles, and all other utensils, handling them with equal care and awareness, putting everything back where it naturally belongs. Think about Orioki. Same process, right? Keep your mind on your work and don't throw things around carelessly. Nobody does that. Kindly, lovingly make differences part of our life and practice. He says, do not arouse disdainful mind when you prepare a broth of wild grasses. Don't arouse a joyful mind when you prepare a fine cream soup. Where there is no discrimination, how can there be distaste? Thus, do not be careless when you work with poor materials and sustain your efforts even when you have excellent materials. Never change your attitude according to the materials. If you do this, it is like varying your truth when speaking with different people. Then you are not a practitioner of the way. So our habit tendency is to not use ingredients we might think will ruin our meal. We want to throw them away and hide them way back on the shelf of our life, out of sight, behind everything else. But Dogen instructs us to take the ingredients we think are going to ruin our supreme meal and figure out how to use them so they improve it. Wow. Well, one day I was making a bean soup and Yukon was in the kitchen with me. And I was putting together, building the soup, and I found a half of banana. He found a half of banana in the refrigerator. And I peeled it and I said to Yukon, put it in the soup. What? Put it in the soup? He was freaking out. I said, I can't believe you. It's a half of banana. It's a bean soup. Put it in the soup. I have not heard the end of this to this day, that I put a half of banana in the soup. So in regards to a person now, at a time it seems that we can't find a way to use a person's particular qualities, which may seem toxic or harmful to what we are trying to do, we may make a clear decision not to use that particular ingredient in the meal we're cooking, but we don't ignore or deny the ingredient. We acknowledge it. We are aware of it. We may even appreciate it in another context. But we just decide for the moment we may not be using it. So to not just say about someone's life, I don't want to be like that. I'll leave it out on the table. Because that's a denial. It's going to be there, whether we like it or not. So to have this bigness that doesn't judge in such a way. And we begin our activities always cleaning, liturgy, preparing the mind. Even if the kitchen looks clean, still we clean it again as we start a new meal. I love cleaning. My motto is, when in doubt, clean. The whole process gets me to care. When we clean, we care about something. And sometimes when I feel like I don't care, I clean because I start to care for my environment, for myself at the same time. And you feel the nutrition, starts to nurture you, right? Wherever we are, the zendo, our living room, a prison cell, a car, so we can clearly see all of our ingredients. It doesn't matter whether we think it's dirty or not. We just clean to begin and see and discover the ingredients that are already present in the space. In cleaning, we find what we don't need and what we have too much of, what's been spoiled, and what needs to be thrown away. Which brings us back to Zazen, the mind of Zazen. Just as we start a meal by cooking, a meal by cleaning the kitchen, we start the day by cleaning our mind. Zazen, the basic ingredients are very simple. We have a place to meditate, something to sit on, your body, your mind, space that's quiet, not too dark or too light, where we're not likely to be disturbed. We can have inspiring images. We have them. Flowers, candlelight, incense, comfortable clothing, non-binding, comfortable position, back straight without tension, our hands placed in a mudra with the thumbs touching lightly to create a restful environment for our mind. On a chair, our feet are placed on the earth like roots, strong roots forming. On the cushion, our knees rest firmly on the earth, forming a triangle to support our back and our spine and our column, allowing our eyes to remain half open, half closed, softened gaze, allowing the eyes muscles to relax while we keep an alert state of mind with the tip of our tongue on the back of our upper palate behind our front teeth. Keep your mouth closed and breathe through the nose. Concentrate on your breathing. Notice the inhalation and the exhalation. As you inhale, count one. As you exhale, two. Count to 10 and then repeat from 1 to 10 again. As thoughts arise, see them. Release them to let them come and go. Keep your attention on counting. When you noticed that thoughts have lost your count, gently return to counting. Start over at 1, and it goes on from there. Our basic ingredients for this supreme meal, our most supreme meal. So Dogen ends with his instructions with these words. If anything should be revered, it is enlightenment. If any time should be honored, it is the time of enlightenment. When you long for enlightenment and follow the way, even taking sand and offering it to Buddha is beneficial. Drawing a figure of Buddha and paying homage also has an effect. How much more so to be in the position of Tenzo? If you act in harmony with the minds and actions of our ancient predecessors, how can you fail to bring forth their virtue in practice? After all, enlightenment's job is compassionate activity. Don't forget the attitude behind living out your life with joy, having deep concern, and carry out all your activities with a broad, mountainous, stable, impartial mind.
Thanks so much for listening. To find out more about our ongoing programs and residency opportunities, visit zmm.org.